College costs are skyrocketing, but some local students are getting a helping hand. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. And just ahead, from football to college tuition and a whole lot more, we're having a conversation about the future of Edward Waters College this morning with President Zachary Faison. You can join us. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look at what's happening all around town this weekend as Matt Pittman stops by. That and more coming up. But first this morning, this week you might have noticed Jacksonville University announced it's ending its college football program. At the same time, another local school is ramping theirs up. Edward Waters College is joining a new conference and getting a new football facility. Not only that, proposed legislation will help some students at EWC pay tuition. And there's a new strategic plan for the school as well. Lots to talk about. So we're pleased to welcome back to Studio 5, Zachary Faison. He's president at Edward Waters College. President Faison, good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa. So pleased to be back with you.
Thanks for joining us. And we're talking about higher education this morning on the show with EWC's president. We're talking college tuition costs, college athletics, and more. Call us up. Share your thoughts. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open, too. Now, I know there's a lot happening at the school besides football.
Yes.
But since we're in the middle of football season, I wanted to begin by asking you about that. Given that sad news out of JU this week, their college football program is going away. At the same time, the college football program on your campus, EWC, is getting some really exciting news. You're getting a new football facility, a new conference. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, I want to place that in context. So we're actually looking at our entire athletic program. It's not just football. It's our entire athletic program. But to kind of give you some context, we are actually still in the exploratory stages of potentially moving EWC's athletic program. We're currently members of the GCAC conference in all of our sports, with the exception of football. We're independent in football. But our governing body is the NAIA. And so we are, again, in the exploratory stages of looking to move to the NCAA level at the Division II level. Mm. One of the first important steps in that process, though, is getting an existing NCAA Division II conference to extend an invitation to you. And so this past spring, the SIAC, which is a historic, venerable HBCU conference, extended an invitation to Edward Waters College to join their conference. So that's kind of the first hurdle. So we've leapt that hurdle, and now we're kind of looking at the next steps, which kind of consist of a whole application process. We've got to look at our facilities. We've got to look at our staffing. And so we're looking at that right now over the next 12 to 18 months.
That's exciting. At the same time, you're looking to target an eventual new home field on land just north of the Adams Jenkins Sports and Music Complex. This was a project approved by the city worth more than $4 million. What will this look like?
Absolutely. We're so excited about that. And so we are looking to break ground sometime potentially later this month, early January, on a $4.4 million community field. It's going to be named for my predecessor, who is no stranger to the Jacksonville community, Nat Glover.
Who was
the 29th president of Edward Waters College. And so we're so excited about that. We certainly appreciate our city council, the leadership of our mayor. Again, this was something that was sitting on the books as of 2017. And unfortunately, it had not moved, in large part because we needed, the way the contract was that EWC had to put the money out first. And while, you know, we thought that we would be able to come up with that money, we actually needed to go back to the city council and have them to help us by putting that money out there for us first. And so the city council recently voted to move that project forward. So we're so excited about it. About 3,000 seats.
Pretty big stadium.
Yeah, pretty big stadium right downtown Jacksonville. And so we were really, really excited about that development.
Wow. And it's 549-2937 to connect with Zachary Faison, president of Edward Waters College. Whether it's football or other athletic programs, how important is athletics in your vision to the vibrancy of this campus?
Well, we see athletics as the proverbial front porch to our institution. I will tell you, with an enrollment of approximately about 940 students, about a third of our students are in some kind of co-curricular activity, whether it be our marching band, our athletics. And so, again, we really see athletics as a front porch, as a viable part of our academic community.
Okay. And you are the nation's youngest HBCU president, is my understanding, Historically Black Colleges and Universities. At the oldest HBCU in Florida.
That's an interesting mix, isn't it?
Yeah. You have this incredible history and legacy bringing youthful energy and new initiatives to Edward Waters College. So given that, I know you want to talk about your vision for the school and your strategic plan. It's called Eminence 2025. Edward Waters has had its ups and downs through the years. And although under your predecessor, as you pointed out, Nat Glover, certainly the school was on a stronger footing. What's your vision now as you lead this school into the next decade?
Well, as we kind of look forward, and I'm glad you mentioned Eminence 2025, it is the new strategic plan for where we seek to take Edward Waters College over the next 5 years. And so this past May, our Board of Trustees approved a new institutional strategic plan that really kind of focuses on four very important pillars. First is to enhance the academic profile of EWC by comprehensively inaugurating a competitive 21st century academic program of superlative excellence. That's our first pillar. Our second pillar is really to create financial viability. As you talked about, there's been some ups and downs at EWC throughout the years. And so we want to create a financial environment where we are viable and sustainable and progressive in terms of our institutional business model. Third, we're wanting to foster a genuine student-centered culture that's essentially rooted in student leadership and development, student success and service, and student engagement and student achievement. And then lastly, really engendering a culture of institutional philanthropic support and branding EWC as a best-in-class institution of distinction and emerging eminence.
Now, against the backdrop of this plan, there are proposals in the Florida House and Senate currently that would provide $25 million for students at three historically Black colleges and universities in Florida. These are funds for students who cannot afford tuition and fees. They would go to students at Bethune-Cookman, Florida Memorial, and Edward Waters. Pretty exciting for a bucket of students on your campus if that becomes reality.
Very exciting, very exciting. And for EWC, I think the legislation has us in at about $5 million. And so a portion of that, we are advocating and asking would go toward gap funding, which would go to help students that don't have the finances to make the difference between what it is that they do have and what it costs to come to the institution. And then the second part of that is an ask that we have for about $1.5 million to be able to launch our first online degree program at EWC, which we really believe will be a game changer for us to make our programs more accessible and affordable and kind of really expand the breadth of our academic offerings.
And this is an online degree in business administration?
That's correct. That's correct. We actually already have an adult accelerated degree program through our Climb program. And so essentially we'd be taking that program, which leads to the bachelor's degree in organizational management, and putting it online. So we're very excited and hopeful that the legislature will help us by funding that initiative.
It's gratifying to see the legislature making these kinds of moves, because whether it's students at your college or anywhere, the cost of college has skyrocketed for all students. It's become out of reach for so many, which is why increasingly we're hearing calls that college should be free or nearly free for those who can't afford to pay. They should have a nearly free option. What are your thoughts about this issue? Because it's shaping up to be a pretty interesting campaign issue this year as we head into 2020.
Well, our thoughts at EWC, we have a long history of providing high quality educational offerings to students while at the same time maintaining a committed focus upon affordability. You will know that Edward Waters College is actually the most affordable private HBCU in the state of Florida and amongst the most affordable institutions of higher education in terms of private institutions throughout the entire state and the Southeast. And so We've been grappling, just like everyone, with how do we continue to provide that high quality, but at the same time, make our academic programs and offerings affordable and accessible. And I will say that I'm proud that Edward Waters College throughout the years has been able to do that. And so mm-hmm. we are still committed to that going forward. But of course, there are challenges. We need the philanthropic support of the business community. We need those that can see that investment in Edward Waters College and its students, that investment, again, comes and will have a positive impact upon the community when we're able to produce those leaders that will come back to the community and really change and shape it.
All right. Let's go to some calls now for our EWC president, E. Zachary Faison. What are your thoughts and comments? We're talking higher ed on the show today. 549-2937. Mark is on the west side right now. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of things. Am I to understand that you're taking money, taxpayer money, from the city council to build your stadium? That's my first question. Second is, are you going to be offering, I know there's a program to get scholarships to your students, but are you going to be offering strictly football scholarships? And my comment is real quick, I think it's pretty well known that football programs, except for a very few, level one, University of Florida, Florida State, those kind of colleges, are a money loser, especially for smaller colleges. And I mean, it's not too very long ago that Edward Waters was, on the verge of economic collapse. Is this a good idea?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the question. What about that?
That's a great question. First of all, let me be real clear in terms of the public monies that we're given for this stadium. First of all, it's a stadium, but it's also a community field. So where we sit in Northwest Jacksonville, our citizens there, our kids there, don't have access to the playgrounds, to the stadiums, to the parks that are available to other folks in other parts of this community. Mm. So that stadium has a walking track that will be open to the public, and so we look to really have that facility be a part of that community to help us in terms of health and wellness for folks in that community. So yes, it was public funds, but let's be very clear that the public citizenry in Northwest Jacksonville, that's contiguous and a part of the Newtown community where EWC sits, will have access and opportunity to really be able to utilize that facility as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because when you came to see me on this show about a year ago, you made the remark that prospective students at EWC, you were having trouble sometimes recruiting them to attend because of the neighborhood where EWC is located.
Absolutely.
And that is a big challenge for you as college president. Do you see the city support as helping to address some of those issues, I guess? Because, for many years, the city of Jacksonville has been knocked for not doing enough to help the Northwest side, promote economic development on the Northwest side, improve infrastructure on the Northwest side.
Yeah.
They are doing this, though, at in the Newtown area and on your campus, at least to a degree. So I think we need to talk about this in the context of that.
Yeah. So to your point, it certainly is improving infrastructure. And you touched on something that's very, very key, and that's economic development. So if you kind of look at the what I think are some synergies that are developing around the stadium, what we're doing in athletics. When you talk about a potential move to the SIAC conference at the Division II level leads the nation in football attendance, okay? Now you're talking about institutions like Tuskegee University, Morehouse College, Clark Atlanta University that play classics, that bring 10, 15, 20,000 patrons to a football game. To bring that kind of energy, foot traffic, to Northwest Jacksonville, those folks have to have places that they eat. Those folks have to have places where they lodge. Now we're talking about bringing real financial viability and impact to the Newtown community. And so it's more than just a stadium. It's more than just a facility. This is a vehicle to impact economic development and then also provide a public good for the citizens that are there in Newtown. The second thing that I think I wanted to get back to that the caller asked about was also the notion of athletics and particularly football programs not being moneymakers. Mm. Interestingly enough.
Certainly they weren't at JU.
Yes, but interestingly enough at EWC, we actually are in the black. We actually gain money from our band and our football program. A lot of times, particularly at the Division II level, which I believe JU was at the D1 level, at the Division II level, we don't give out full scholarships, for example. We don't give out a 50 or 60 scholarships, for example. The scholarships amounts that we give out are minuscule compared to what the large Division I schools give out. And so we have a lot of students that want the opportunity to play collegiate sports, but they're willing to pay as a full-time student just to have the opportunity to play football. So for EWC, it actually is a moneymaker because we're not under the same auspices of having to provide 60, 70, and 80 scholarships with regard to full scholarships. We have a number of students that come to us, again, that want to participate in collegiate sports and are paying students. So for us, it actually is a financial supporter of our institution.
You're looking just at a different lay of the land than Jacksonville University apparently was in terms of the demographics and desires of your students.
Absolutely.
It sounds like.
Absolutely.
Okay. What are your questions for Zachary Faison, president at Edward Waters College? It's 549-2937. We'll go to your tweets and emails in a moment. Eric is in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Hey, guys. A couple of comments. When my dad retired, he was a university professor at UNF. And when he retired, he donated a bunch of his books to Edward Waters College. And I went down there with him to drop the books off. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, there's kind of that university is a lot of old brick buildings. And I could see the potential in it. But when I looked around, I was sort of, I guess, saddened by the fact that, you know, as someone who was used to the UNF campus and had never been to Edward Waters College, to go over there and see the depressed state of the neighborhood and the school and so on, it was very eye-opening for me. The other comment is, I live in the 32254, and I guess that's either in the same zip or right next to it. And so I'm all for whatever y'all are doing to develop down there. And as far as the previous caller goes, you know, I think it's really sad that the attitude of people in this town is that we don't mind forking over money to subsidize billionaires like Shad Khan and the Jacksonville Jaguars. But when it comes to building and supporting kids and families and institutions in our own city, suddenly we are against it or reluctant to use public monies. What better use are there for public monies than doing that? And I support everything you're doing, and good luck.
Okay, Eric.
Well, thank you so
thanks
much.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think he's right on target. Again, what I've said as president is that an investment in Edward Waters and in Newtown and in Northwest Jacks is an investment in our future. It's an investment in our city on the whole. And so I think that there's not a better investment of public funds than to invest in, again, the state of Florida's first higher educational institution and that sits right here in our backyard. And so
the oldest college in Florida,
the oldest independent institution of higher education, not just black institution,
but
the
any.
Oldest
yeah.
independent institution in the entire state.
It was founded in the year
1866.
1 year after the end of the Civil War.
That's correct.
So try to picture what that was like.
That's correct. That's correct.
And, you know, listening to Eric call in from Arlington, and he made the observation that he had never been over to that neighborhood before, going to drop some books off as donations to EWC. That I think, is illustrative of what a lot of listeners out there, what their life experience is. There are thousands and thousands of people that live in this city who have never, ever been to the neighborhood we're talking about.
Yes, yes.
They've never driven through, driven down
the
Kings Road corridor, driven by EWC, driven around the neighborhoods there. And they honestly, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
If you've never been to that side of town, you really, I don't think you understand the true level of poverty.
Right.
You don't understand the true issues with poor infrastructure, poor economic development. I think a lot of folks would be shocked,
right? And
if they went to this side of town,
right?
And you know, I've heard it mentioned many times by city leaders, including even once the mayor. I said this. He pointed out that people in this community are very generous and they like to do mission trips overseas with their churches. Well, you can do
mission work right here in Jacksonville.
Right here in Jacksonville. You don't have to get on a plane and buy a passport. You can do a mission trip right here in this city where 70% of the kids are on free or reduced lunch.
There you go.
And so at the risk of editorializing a little bit, I just wanted to point that out. And so these are some of the headwinds you're dealing with as you work to grow this university, a college rather.
Yeah.
And so let me get to some emails now for you. Here's one from Laureen. Typically, HBCUs don't normally have the academic rigor necessary for students to be prepared for the workforce. Are you remedying this historical deficit? In addition, EWC has a history of not paying employees on time. Has this changed under your presidency?
So I'll take that first question. Absolutely. One of the things that our Board of Trustees recently implemented is that we have established now minimum grade point average in ACT, SAT scores. Traditionally, Edward Waters College has been an open admissions institution. And because of a real desire for higher accountability, we wanted to ensure that the students that come to us are students that have the capacity, that have demonstrated the ability to be able to be successful. But at the same time, we're not going to jettison what we feel is a very venerable focus upon providing access and opportunity. So let me just give you two quick examples. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've done this year is to establish for the very first time at Edward Waters College, the Honors College at EWC. This is a collection of very high achieving students. So this year was our first year with what we call our alpha cohort. Let me just tell you a little bit about these students. 25 students, a average grade point average of 4.0, 1130 on the SAT.
Okay? Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're talking about high scholarly, high achieving students. But at the same time, again, and this is what's unique about HBCUs, we don't think it's a either or, we believe it's a both and. So while we've brought on our high achieving scholarly students with regard to our Honors College, at the same time, we implemented what's called our Charles H. Pierce Institute, which is a summer bridge program that says, if you don't meet our minimum grade point average and SAT, ACT score requirements, we're going to allow you the opportunity to come to a summer program that's about 6 or 8 weeks long, take three credit-bearing courses. If you're able to pass those courses, which, again, you're showing us, hey, I know I maybe I made some missteps in high school. Maybe I had some issues going on at home, but I want this opportunity. You come to the summer program, complete the program successfully, then you're a regular admit to EWC. And this past year, we had 30 students that started that program. 29 of them completed the program. Over 52% of them complete the program with a 3.0 grade point average or higher. And 29 of the 30 then came and matriculated as freshman students at EWC this fall. And so absolutely, we're doing those things to really, really expand and enhance our academic profile at Edward Waters College.
And she also mentioned a history of employees, I wasn't aware of this, not always being paid on time. So this gets back to what we referenced a few minutes ago. Edward Waters has had problems through the years.
Yeah,
so how to deal with some of that?
I'll say this. That's news to me. I've never heard that. But I can say that since I've been at EWC as of July 16, 2018, we've met every pay period on time. So I'm not sure exactly what that's in reference to. But that certainly is not the Edward Waters College of today.
And, you know, when you talk about HBCUs, you have the same portfolio and challenge of any other HBCU president. You're competing for students.
Oh, yeah, I mean, well, they were, HBCU or non-HBCU, you are all competing for students.
And these colleges and universities were formed when African-American students were shut out of all the other colleges and universities in America. Now it's a different playing field, and you're competing in a different way to try to attract the best students.
It is. But I think that you know, as we talk about the historicity of HBCUs, and even Edward Waters, I mean, a lot of times the narrative is around us being the first and being the oldest, and that's important and that has its place. But I think what's more important is for us to talk about our contemporaneous relevance, and so that's what we're excited about. We're excited about our Honors College. We're excited about the fact that we actually are going to be bringing on three new academic programs over the next 5 years. Our board has approved for us to bring on a new program in forensic science, a new program in social work, a new program in computer science. We're also looking at being able to establish probably within the next probably about 12 to 18 months, dual degree programs, some with some local colleges and universities in nursing. Again, we are really, really excited about the future at Edward Waters College and the contemporaneous relevance of the work that we're doing today. And so, you know, as we look to position ourselves to be even more competitive, we're excited about what we're doing from an athletic perspective, from an academic perspective, mm-hmm. and the product that we're producing. Because at the end of the day, what parents want to know, what students want to know is, if I make this investment in 4 to 5 years, what can I expect to be the return on that investment? And that's what we're about positioning. Our value proposition is that if you make an investment in sending your child to Edward Waters College, that you can expect that student's going to be prepared to be a leader when we graduate them.
Let's go to Tim in Orange Park. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Great.
Good. I'm a school owner in Green Coast Springs. I own a Pax Karate out there. And we have our tournaments at your fine college. I want to thank you for all the uses, because
you
guys got a great facility there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I was wondering if you would consider having Pax Karate classes out at your school.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Why don't you do this? Send us an email. Send me an email, azfazon@ewc.edu, and we can certainly explore that.
Outstanding, sir. And good luck. And like I said, we very much appreciate all your hospitality out there.
Thank you so very much.
That's great. Okay. Ira is on the south side. Ira, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Appreciate the president sharing his vision. I'm Army Airborne retired. Is there a four-year ROTC program at Edward Waters? And if not, does the president consider establishing one? Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that.
That's certainly with the large military presence that we have in Jacksonville, that is a space that EWC, that we are wanting to really be able to explore and exploit at a higher level. We actually do have a ROTC collaborative partnership with UNF currently.
Okay.
We do have that collaborative partnership, but we are looking and would love to be able to have an opportunity to have our own exclusive ROTC program at EWC. And so I certainly think that's something that would be a priority that we would want to explore going forward.
Hmm. I'd follow up with him on that, Ira, if you have some thoughts. He's easy to get a hold of.
Okay. That's good to know.
What's the email address again for you?
AZ, A as in Apple, Z as in Zachary, Faison, Faison at EWC.edu. And interestingly enough, as I'm thinking about it, we actually have already looked into it. But it's my understanding that the armed forces, for example, they only will allow a certain number of ROTC establishments at institutions, and they have to have the additional funding to be able to establish those. But so if Ira though has some okay. some in that we can talk to someone that will help us in that regard, we'd certainly like to hear from him.
Well, it's great to connect you with all the listeners, and kudos on all the exciting new energy at EWC. He's Zachary Faison, president at Edward Waters College, the youngest HBCU president in America. Kind of cool.
Yeah, kind of cool.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you. Same to you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
More veterans news up next, speaking of the military, as Florida's vets remember Pearl Harbor. We'll be right back.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know
change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die.
My mom was high ranking. She wasn't just a numbers runner. She was a banker. And she was the only woman in Detroit operating at that level.
Join us for more true stories told live. Next time, parental lessons, both purposeful and accidental. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Join us this weekend on Live From Here with Chris Thiele at the Town Hall in New York City. Our guests this week are Pixies, Black Pumas, Crooked Still with our very own Aoife O'Donovan, Freestyle Love Supreme, and our Out in America correspondent, comedian Tom Papa. Come spend some time with us. Your ears will thank you.
Saturday evening at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this week, veterans across the First Coast are marking the annual remembrance of Pearl Harbor. At the same time, they're working to gain more support for veteran suicide prevention and programs for women veterans. Commander William Rick Johnson is a department commander with the American Legion, representing more than 100,000 veterans across Florida, and he's on the line now. Commander Johnson, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks, and thanks for joining us. You served during Operation Desert Storm, awarded the Bronze Star. Thank you for your service in serving overseas. And so let's talk about the remembrance of Pearl Harbor happening this week. We're hearing about this just as we're getting terrible news from Pearl Harbor at the Naval Shipyard there this morning. A sailor apparently fatally shot two people and injured another before taking his own life. Very sad news from Pearl Harbor. And I wanted to make mention of that, but at the same time, talk about what's happening in our area as we mark the remembrance. Can you share that with us?
Yes, well, it's going around all around the state of Florida, especially at the naval ports and Coast Guard stations, remembrance of December 7, 1941, as a Day of Empathy. I got invited up there to Jacksonville. I'm going to be there on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. At FRA 290 in Mayport. It's a very, very somber ceremony. And it's a shame that we're doing a ceremony like this. And, it's, you know, Pearl Harbor Day was going on the wayside, until something else happened in our history. It was 9/11. And once 9/11 happened, then the remembrance got more and more out there as far as what happened, how it happened, and we will never let it happen again.
Right. Pearl Harbor Day is observed every year in the U.S. on December 7th. It's a way to remember the 2,403 U.S. citizens who were killed in the surprise attack by the Japanese on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. This happened on December 7th, 1941, the worst attack this nation endured up until 9/11. And as you pointed out, through the years, memories can fade. So it is important to continue to tell this story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, and for, especially to tell the story to our kids in the schools, to keep the memory going and what caused this and the sacrifice that they made for our lives that we have right now.
Exactly right. Now, let's talk about that, because another big cause for you as a department commander is preventing veteran suicide and helping strengthen programs for veterans who've served once they return stateside. Let's talk about that, because veteran suicides are at epidemic levels in this country right now. I think it's fair to say it's a public health emergency. What are your thoughts about efforts here in Florida to reach out to this vulnerable group?
Well, the efforts we have going on in Florida is very, very well-versed right now. Right now, an average of 22 veterans a day are committing suicide across the nation. That's 22 too many right now. We have awareness groups going on right now, and especially within Congress and the state of Florida, to let people be aware of what's happening out there. This is a secret that's being kept out there through different channels, which I don't want to say right now, different channels out there, but the public has to be aware of what's happening out there. And we have to, you know, besides using pills and things of that nature, there's other means to deal with these types of illnesses, because it is illness, you know, and because they're home now, it doesn't mean the war stops in their head. They keep on thinking about it. There's different trigger points, and it's a shame that they cannot get more help. And what we're doing in Florida right now is making people aware of that, and especially with the VA and especially with our president, to make sure that they are aware of what's happening. And until we get this down to zero, one is too many.
You know, here in Northeast Florida, the United Way has been working with veterans organizations like Five Star Veterans Center and others to try to reach out to these men and women, because isolation can be a big problem, trouble finding a job, the stigma of dealing with mental health issues like PTSD, and then also trouble accessing care at the VA. These are all hurdles, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And so
we fight every day in Washington, D.C. We have our lobbyists up there with the American Legion to fight this and to combat this. And until we get everybody on board with this and have a bipartisan vote in Congress and in the House, this will continue to go on. We need to set politics out of this. And a veteran is a veteran. A veteran who served honorably should be given every choice and every chance to come back home safely.
Let's go to Maureen in Mandarin. She has some thoughts about Pearl Harbor Day. Hi, Maureen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Maureen, and I'm a volunteer with the Mandarin Museum, and we have an annual winter celebration the first Saturday of every year. So this year, we are having a special salute to Pearl Harbor, and we are pleased to note that we have five survivors of World War II who will be there also.
Oh, wow.
It will begin at 11 o'clock, and the whole park will be open after the salute to the veterans, and there will be hay rides for the kids. And there's no charge for entrance. It's an annual wonderful celebration to the history of Florida and Mandarin in particular, and this year for the Pearl Harbor survivors.
And that's this Saturday?
Yes, ma'am. This Saturday at the Mandarin Museum and Historical Park, which is also called the Walter Jones. That's the name of Mandarin celebration, winter celebration. But the park is the Walter Jones Park right off of Mandarin Road.
Well, thank you for that. And I'm so glad we could get you on to let the listeners know, because whether it's on Pearl Harbor Day or any day, the Mandarin Museum is a real gem. So, Maureen, thanks for promoting
it
that.
Is.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. You know, Commander Johnson, there are still quite a few surviving veterans from the Pearl Harbor attack, as she pointed out.
Yes, there is. I'm in South Florida right now. We had a lot of hit down here in South Florida, but right now we have none left in South Florida. Our last one passed away last year at 101 years old.
Wow. You know, and when you were talking about the VA issues, Governor Ron DeSantis was recently in St. Augustine working to get a VA clinic set up there. A congressman from our area, Congressman Al Lawson, he's been working in Washington, he's told us several times, to try to get a VA hospital here in Jacksonville, because it's my understanding most local veterans to access the VA have to drive all the way from this area over to Lake City, which is
right.
Frustrating given our large veteran population in Jacksonville.
Yes. It's a shame, you know, especially in our larger cities, that there should be a VA hospital there where it could be reached by everybody. Down south here, we have two VA hospitals down south right here within 40 miles of each other. So that's to be up in Jacksonville and drive from Jacksonville all the way to Lake City for that type of care shouldn't be. And hopefully the governor, which is a American Legion member and a veteran, will get that done in Jacksonville.
Okay. And so as we look ahead to Pearl Harbor Day, what are the other biggest issues that you think veterans in this state are dealing with? And what advice do you give veterans that are having trouble accessing care, finding jobs? What resources do you direct them to?
Well, we have at our department headquarters and our department website, we have everything online for them to use at their fingertips to help them through a transition type period. What we need to do, especially on the active side before they get out, to make sure that all their questions are answered and that everything that has happened to them during their time in service is documented. The hardest thing for the veterans right now to come out, it wasn't documented while there was active duty, and to get it done while they're out of service and trying to find jobs. Right now, our younger veterans are trying to find, they're trying to raise their family, trying to get education, trying to buy a house, and have good income, you know, coming in to raise a family. And it's hard for them right now. It really is. And we're the American Legion, with our other veteran service organizations, are trying to help them coming home, and we're reaching out to them to try to give them help, especially in time of need.
Okay, and last but not least, let's talk about programs that you have through the Legion for women veterans, because they have their own set of issues.
Yes, we do. I have a women's veteran advocate in the state of Florida. She deals with women issues only, and women's issues are a lot different than the men issues. And it's the same thing in the VA clinics. Now, just about all the VA clinics have a specialized women's clinic only that women will see the female doctors that they feel more comfortable in to talk with to the doctors about everything that's going on.
And can you tell folks, you mentioned your website a few times, Commander Johnson, where do people need to go to access this portal and learn more?
Okay, our website is www.floridalegion.org. And when you go on the website there, all the information is on the website. Any type of information they need, from their DD-214, DD-215, how to access that, and everything that we as a veteran service organization can do for them and their family. We give assistance in for the children. We give assistance in education. We give assistance if they have dire straits at one time, can't pay their rent, or need help with a car or maintenance on the car. We have those programs put in place in the state of Florida for them.
All right. That's floridalegion.org. And he's Commander William Rick Johnson with the American Legion. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, ma'am. And I appreciate it.
In a moment, a look at some ideas to take you all around town this weekend, including a local production of A Christmas Carol. Stay with us.
Sporer Dodd is a personal injury law firm based in Jacksonville with over 150 years of legal experience. Sporer Dodd is known for their legal expertise, experience, and results. Learn more at sdlitigation.com.
Void Magazine's November 2019 issue is the Do-Good issue. Filling the void in Northeast Florida for nearly a decade, Void keeps your finger on the pulse of our region's unique culture and lifestyle. Available at over 400 locations. For more, voidlive.com.
On the next Fresh Air, what does Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have to say about Trump Putin, and the impeachment hearings. Last Saturday, Time correspondent Simon Schuster interviewed the Ukrainian president. Schuster will join us from Kyiv to talk about Zelensky and ties between Trump, his allies, and oligarchs. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Cities across the country are dealing with a housing affordability crisis, and it's forcing some difficult choices.
Either we step up to the plate and figure out a funding path that can actually start chipping away at this, or we're going to see ourselves having to do emergency funding for more homeless shelter construction.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
In order to fund an ambitious port project, Sri Lanka borrowed millions from the Chinese government. When it defaulted on that loan, China took control. Some welcomed the move.
You went and built this horrible thing that's sitting there. Now we have to pay back the loan. Here, take your port and you cancel the loan.
More this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Around Town is brought to you by St. Augustine Distillery, handcrafted small batch spirits.
Welcome back. It's a new adaptation of the classic tale of Ebenezer Scrooge. Players by the Sea is staging a new production of A Christmas Carol, and it debuts tomorrow night. Here with a preview, director Suzanne Hudson-Smith, Lisa Fleming, who plays Mrs. Cratchit in the show, and scenic designer Candace Dickens. No relation to Charles Dickens.
Actually, according to my husband's grandmother.
Well, excuse me. Oh my gosh, you're fancy. Well, ladies, thanks for being here. Suzanne, who doesn't love A Christmas Carol? Tell us about the show.
Exactly. Dickens' classic tale. And we're here to have some fun with it and tell it in a little different way, have some visuals for it. So you're going to get a great sense of movement for the show. And Candace, as our set designer, has brought that to life for us. And you're going to still have that magical moment of some wonderful makeup that brings on the ghosts. And so you don't want to miss the tale. No matter how it's told, this is a holiday show that you want to be there for.
Lisa, you play Mrs. Cratchit.
I do. I'm very excited. This is actually my first time back on the stage after 12 years. So I took a break being a mom and I was teaching school. And so when I got started in with Shrek, and did prosthetics for that, and then decided I would go ahead and audition for this, and also got to show my makeup skills with the ghost as well.
Oh, how exciting. So amazing makeup and amazing scenery, Candace. What will be new and exciting here?
Well, we don't want to give too much away. Uh-huh. A lot of fun surprises. There's an additional character that's not listed, and that is the City of London itself has an interesting part of the tale to tell. And it was the vision that Suzanne kind of brought to me. And she's like, I want to do this. How in the world do we do it? And that's, you know, what she and I sit down and work through. And so it's been a lot of fun to kind of take her vision and meld it with kind of the vision that I had. Absolutely. And put something together that's great.
And there's a reason this story is still beloved 250 years after it was first written.
That reclamation of self, you know, the holiday and the spirit that everyone brings to this time of year where we're wrapping up a year, but also we're looking to the new of 2020 and then that time of course, older ages, but changing, making better choices, going forward and being the person we all really want to be.
You can always become a better person. If Ebenezer Scrooge can do it, we all
Everybody can.
So get your tickets now for A Christmas Carol, which debuts tomorrow night at Players by the Sea. PlayersbytheSea.org for tickets. Ladies, break a leg. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa,
for being here. And that is tomorrow night. Guess what, though? We have lots of other ideas out there for your weekend. Matt Pittman of Main Events Jax has a look at what's happening around town to add to your social calendar. Hey, Matt.
Hi. I love it. We're going to keep with the holiday spirit as we are like running to Christmas. And we'll kick it off with the Jacksonville Symphony and their holiday pops, which will be going on this weekend. Friday night, there's a show at 8 p.m. Saturday, two shows on Sunday as well. And, of course, the Jacksonville Symphony playing all the classic mm-hmm. hits for your holidays. JackSymphony.org is where you can buy tickets. And they start out at only $19. So that's
very
not bad.
Nice. Now, yeah. Also Friday night, the Harlem Globetrotters.
That's right. Of course, one of your favorite basketball teams ever are going to be right mm-hmm. here in Jacksonville over at the Veterans Memorial Arena. Now, this show is going to be Friday night at 7 p.m. Tickets only $23. So family fun event over at the Veterans Memorial Arena.
Three more ideas from Matt, including the St. Augustine annual Christmas parade. I've never been to that.
Now, this is a huge deal. They really do it up with the floats. They have, of course, the arrival of Santa is going to be there. Horses, cars, marching bands, and you can actually go to saintaugustinesocial.com. Fair warning, show up early. This kicks off at 9 a.m., okay. So if you plan on going, show up early because it's crowded and crazy.
It gets popular. That's Saturday morning, yep. St. Augustine. And one of my favorite things, Christmas in Avondale is Saturday.
Along with you, I'm a big supporter of shopping small business, supporting yes. local. So this is a great chance for you to do this on Saturday. It's from 4 to 8 p.m. There's going to be vendors out on the street. But of course, all the shops are going to be open. All the bars, the restaurants are going to be there. So go ahead and head out to Avondale on Saturday.
And this is cool, too. Trisha Yearwood is performing in town.
Yeah, I only know her from the Food Network.
I know, me too.
I was like, she makes great food.
But she's actually a very popular country music star, too.
Turns out she sings. So you can see her over at the Florida Theater. This is Saturday at 8 p.m. FloridaTheater.com. Hurry to get these tickets because it is going to sell out. $35 tickets, not so bad.
And every once in a while, Garth Brooks will drop in on her cooking show, which is kind of fun to watch on TV.
And last but not least, I do have to say this. Minshew Mania is back in Jacksonville.
Yes.
Super excited.
It?
The Jags take on the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday. Game time, 4:05. You can go to jaguars.com. And actually, Heather, our producer, sent me a link on Groupon right now. You can buy tickets for only $23.
Really?
Yeah.
So get your Minshew on this Sunday.
I'm super excited.
You've even got your Jaguars hat on here in the studio.
I came
so
sporting.
You're representing. That's right. He is Matt Pittman of Main Events Jax. So whatever you do this weekend, have fun. Get into the holiday spirit. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs this show. Our station news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Make sure to join us tomorrow for all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. That's coming up tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast, just keep listening for some great music. We'll catch you tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.